Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to discuss MSU's upcoming first-round NCAA tournament game against the Mississippi State Bulldogs, an 8-9 matchup. Before we start, we'd like to thank all the awesome supporters to the show who help keep us on the air, namely Patreon supporters at the Mateen Cleaves level, Bill Church, Brian O'Donnell, and Chad Hickey, Draymond Green supporters Adam Walczak, Dan Rankin, James Benton, Jim L., Michael Bosnick, Paul Marsh, and Scott Driscoll, as well as Rich Wagner and Kenneth Cremat on Substack. If you appreciate the MSU content we crank out, please head on over to the Final Four is not on the schedule.com/support to reach the necessary links to keep us on the air. All right, well, after a semi-stress-induced wait until the last bracket, Michigan State was rewarded with a 9 seed in the West region with potential second-round opponent, number 1 seed, North Carolina. Most prognosticators had MSU as a 10 or play-in team, but the criteria used moved the Spartans up to the 9 line. The game against the Bulldogs will be at 12:15 on Thursday in Charlotte, North Carolina. And so let's talk about the other MSU, Mississippi State. They're 21-13 overall, 8-10 in the SEC. They had a nice run in the conference tournament semifinals before falling to Auburn. They're 30th in KenPom. As a comparison, Michigan State is 18th. They're 31st in the net. Michigan State is 24th. They had two common opponents with the Spartans. They beat Northwestern on a neutral floor early in the season by 9. And they also beat Rutgers by 10 in a game that's not a home game but for Rutgers, but not exactly a lot closer to Rutgers, I guess it would say, than it was Mississippi State. So their overall profile is very similar to Michigan State's. So they're it's almost like one of those Spider-Mans, but point each other, right? 60th on offense, 20th on defense. By comparison, Michigan State is 57th on offense and 8th on defense. On offense, their strengths are offensive rebounding, they're 21st, free throw attempts to field goal attempts at 56th, and two-point shooting at 56th. Their weaknesses are turnovers. They are terrible. They're ranking 290th, so one out of every five possessions ends in a turnover. Their three-point percentage is poor, 32.5%, which is good for 247th, and they also take quite a few, which is unfortunate, since you know they're not hitting a very good clip. They are 154th in attempts, average attempts for 3 points. Free throw percentage is also bad. They're 67% shooting. They're one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the country. This is sort of in contrast, or maybe because they are also a physical team, that kind of profile. So they get to the line a decent amount. On defense, they're pretty good. They're good at causing turnovers. They're 38th in steal percentage, but only 104th in turnover percentage. And their three-point percent against is number 6. So teams shoot below 30% for them for three. They don't limit threes very well at all, though. So they're 303rd as far as amount of attempted against them. And 2% defense is not good. They're 174th. Defensive rebounding is okay at 111th. And they tend to foul a decent amount. They're ranking 171st in amount of fouls when you're on defense. And they play a bit slower pace than average. They're 202nd overall. But other teams play fast against them at 54. And their offensive possession length is 241st. So they are similar, not identical to Michigan State, but they are kind of similar-ish profiles.
Yeah, they land.
Except rebounding.
They land in roughly the same place, but how they overall, but
exactly,
how they get there is not really all that similar. Mississippi State is a big physical team that's evident in their profile. It's evident when you watch them, and I watched a little bit of them last night and this morning. Tom Izzo has noted that. He said they're actually very reminiscent of the stereotype of a Big Ten team, you know, which is true.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Their strengths and weaknesses are not similar at all to Michigan State. So offensively, there's two things they do really well, as you noted. They get a lot of second chances. This is a near elite offensive rebounding team, and they draw a lot of fouls. Well, that's the profile of a big physical team, what you'd expect. They struggle from three. Now, they have a couple of guys who are capable shooters, but as a team, they don't shoot a very good percentage. They're sub 33%, and yet they put up a lot of them. They take a lot of shots, so I don't quite understand that, but nevertheless,
they track down the rebounds. Maybe that's their strategy.
That's what goes on. But the biggest problem is, as you noted, it's turnovers. They are just a terrible team when it comes to valuing the ball. One out of every five possessions turning it over is not good. And
yeah,
so that area of the game, you want to know why they're 60th in offense, where Michigan State's 57th. Well, the reason is, all those extra shots they're getting via offensive rebounding, they're giving right back with their turnovers. Mm-hmm. So they kind of cancel each other out. And, you know, if Mississippi State was getting a distinct advantage in the number of scoring attempts as opposed to opponents, they'd be a better team with a better profile. But they're not, because of the turnover issue. Defensively, the steals turnover thing is weird. Normally, those track a little better than this. They're better than Michigan State in terms of generating steals. Michigan State's good, but they're really good.
Yeah.
But they don't force or don't end up getting the benefit of nearly as many non-live ball turnovers as Michigan State does. So their overall turnover percentage on defense is okay. It's not great, whereas the steals would lead you to conclude it should be better than that. You know, it's an interesting team defensively, stylistically, and if you watch any of them on YouTube, you'll see this. It's roughly similar to what Chris Beard did when he was at Texas Tech, and a lot of other teams have copied. They try to ice ball screens, so they try to force you to the side. It's not a pure no middle kind of defensive approach, but that's, I think, about execution more than preference. I think they're trying to do that. They're just not great at it. Their defensive rebounding's okay. I mean, the biggest success story is the three percentage against, and it's coming on heavy volume. So on the one hand, you could say, well, that's a lot of good fortune. Because we say the most controllable thing in defending threes is limiting attempts. But when it's coming on as much volume as they've given up, I've got to give some of the credit to the defense. And I think part of it is that their size, they play a long lineup. And I think that's playing a role in this, much as it does with some other teams you'll see. I think Illinois, even though they're not defensive team, I think at times they can do a good job. Although with them, it's mostly about limiting attempts. With this team, it's success against. They're not great against twos. They're not great in terms of defensive rebounding. So it really comes down to the steals and the threes, I think, is why they're in a solid position. But again, they're 20th on defense. Michigan State has gotten all the way up to eighth.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Defensively. So there's a difference. There's a difference there. And you mentioned the pace. They don't want to be in a hurry when they've got the ball. But opponents have actually been able to play pretty fast against them. I would say this. I think, also worth noting, despite their size, very little in the way of rim protection. So I will say this. I think there's an opportunity for Michigan State to get some things done getting to the rim against this team. So that's going to be on the guards. And I think there may well be opportunities to run. I'm sure that their head coach, Chris Jans, is drilling into them for the next 3 days the need to get back in transition. But as we've seen time and time again, yeah. when you are facing Michigan State in the NCAA tournament and you're not used to this, it can be a whole new ball game. And this Michigan State team, as opposed to, say, last year's, actually is running at a pretty good clip.
Yeah.
So they are going to test that. And I think it will not surprise me if Mississippi State springs a few leaks. It's a hell of a test for Chris Jans. He's never faced Michigan State. For those who don't know about him, it's kind of an interesting run. It's kind of the stereotype of the guy who ends up with a job at an SEC school where they don't care about problems. Mm-hmm. He had been an assistant, pretty successful one. He got the job at Bowling Green, and I forget what year it was. It was maybe, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, something like that. Had a good first year, 21 games. They didn't make the NCAA tournament. They got to the postseason. And then there was some video of him that leaked. I think he was drunk and harassing a woman. It was something along those lines. And he got fired. But New Mexico State brought him on. And again, New Mexico State is another place where you can go if you've got, short of you went to jail for on a murder charge, they'll give you a chance if they think you can coach. And he had a ton of success there. And then Mississippi State hired him last season, and he's been pretty good. He's gotten to the tournament both years. So he's a proven coach. It's just, he's the kind of guy that you would not expect a Big Ten school to hire. Let's put it that way. And I don't know a lot beyond what I just said, whether that was a one-off and it was just a moment of incredibly poor judgment, or whether this has been a problem for him or what it is. But I do think that is still a distinction between the Big Ten and the SEC. It's where a guy like Bruce Pearl can get one but not two head coaching jobs. Right. When he's had multiple problems. Chris Beard, after his incident with his fiance, girlfriend, whatever she is, and domestic assault that cost him his job at Texas, he lands at Ole Miss. That conference is full of these guys. Always has been. Doesn't look like anything's changed. But he can coach basketball. That much I'll give him.
And, I think one of the numbers you pointed out here, not actually about Mississippi State, but actually Michigan State, is Michigan State is up to eighth on defense. And yeah. We had talked about this earlier, that because I think Michigan State was hovering the 20s for a while, and we had talked about if Michigan State could just sort of shore up the defensive rebounding, they would be a sub 10, an elite defense, and they've done that. I mean, the last few games, they have defensively rebounded pretty well. They're not getting killed like they were before, and that has made a huge difference from the metric standpoint, at least.
Unfortunately, it's also come in conjunction with the offense completely going the other direction.
I mean,
for a good portion of the Big Ten season, Michigan State was hovering, between 25 and 35, and they actually recovered in the Big Ten tournament a little bit because they were lower than they are now. They're 57th, I think, now. They were in the 60s at the end of the regular season. So, yeah, the defense has gotten even better. The offense, unfortunately, it's gone the other direction. But so, yeah, I mean, you're right about where these teams land overall. It's not a dissimilar place, but the routes they've taken to get there and the strengths and weaknesses are very different.
Yeah. One if by sea, two if by land. All right. So we'll go on to the starters for Mississippi State. This is brought to you by the Brothers to Just Two Gutters and the player that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter. Well, it is definitely springtime. It's NCAA tournament time, which means it's time to make sure that if your team, and well, I assume everyone here is a Michigan State fan, so actually your team's not in the gutter, but we probably were feeling like that for a little while until we got to that fourth bracket, as it was a little bit dicey. Michigan State was announced, but it doesn't change the fact that it's still going to rain on you and it's going to get, water's going to get around your house. So make sure you have a good gutter system that takes care of it, or maybe your business. So you want to make sure the right people have got it cleaned out. Maybe you've got some leaf guards in there now, so you don't have to get up on the ladder. They can repair them. They can replace them. The Brothers of Josue Gutters are the go-to stop for you for your gutter work. Make sure you head on over to our support page to find ways to get access to them at thefinalforest.theschedule.com/support. You can find a link for Kurt and his team on the west side in the Grand Rapids area, or Greg and his team in the Metro Detroit area. They're super friendly, great pricing, 10% off. If you mention Final Four, we get your estimate. All right, so we'll begin with the starters. And the guard, 5'10" freshman, Josh Hubbard, leads the team in scoring at 17.1 points a game on 39, 36, and 85 shooting. Not even two assists a game. He only has 59 assists on the season with 42 turnovers and doesn't shoot a lot of free throws. So he's definitely like a jump shooter, it sounds like.
Yeah, he takes a ton of threes. I think he's between 9 and 10 three-point attempts a game.
Wow.
Very small at 5'10", but extremely quick. Gets to the line a decent amount, about 4 free throw attempts a game. So he's not just a jump shooter, but mostly that's what he's going to be. Izzo mentioned today he was only playing about 10 minutes or so per game early in the season, and then they started going to him, and he had a run of like 4 or 5 games at one point where he averaged 29 points a game, and that wow. really got him on track. And so, look, for a true freshman, we've talked about
that's
it,
great.
You know, at different points this year, how the impact of even elite freshmen, and he was not an elite recruit, but the impact of those guys has been really muted this year. And so to have any true freshman at a high major school averaging 17 points a game is pretty impressive. The issue here, I think they're a weird team, as you're going to see, because you would assume the 5'10 guy is your point guard, but he's not. He's not a good decision maker. And he's not a guy they run their offense through in terms of trying to set things up. He's a guy who's a finisher. He's a guy who launches shots. But it's best to think of him as a 5'10 off guard, because that's really what he is.
And then next would be Deshaun Davis, 6'2 senior, averaging 6.7 points a game on 38, 35, and 70 shooting. Second on the team in assists at about 2.5 a game, with a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. And also pulls most of the steals on the team. He's second with steals with that 1.7 a game.
Yeah, you know, solid role player type. Not a huge scorer. Decent three-point shooter, especially for this team. Decent playmaker on a team that really struggles with that. I mean, it's not even just that they're a heavy turnover team. It's that they don't have a lot of guys really making plays for others either. 2.5 right. assists per game, and he's a close second on the team in assists. But they will run some offense through him. You know, gives them something defensively, as you mentioned, second on the team in steals. So, you know, kind of a glue guy role player.
And you say he'd be sort of the, if you had to pick a point guard, he's sort of more the point than
no,
Hubbard
he's the he's the secondary playmaker. Their primary playmaker is the next guy you're going to mention.
Yeah, Cameron Matthews.
Who's a 6'7 forward. Yeah.
Yeah, 230 pounds.
It's a weird team.
It is a weird team. he averages 9.5 points a game on 62, 9, and 56 shooting.
Yeah.
Second rebounding on the team at 6.9 rebounds a game. Almost 2.5 of those on average are offensive.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, leads the team assists at 3 a game. But with it, sounds like with Mississippi State, with assists come turnovers.
Yeah.
So although he has 100 assists for the season, he also has 75 turnovers.
Yeah.
Also has 2 steals a game and leads the team in blocks at 0.7 per game.
Yeah, he is their jack-of-all-trades type. They run a lot of offense through him as a point forward. Not to where he's Draymond Green, but, you know, they will run offense through him. He's an extremely efficient shooter around the rim, but he can't hit a jumper to save his life. he's a factor for them in steals. He's their best rim protector, which isn't saying a ton, less than 1 block shot a game, but still, He's leading the team in that category. And he's a very effective rebounder, especially on the offensive end. I mean, 2.5 offensive rebounds per game, and you're not Zach Edey, that's solid. So he's, you know, it's a funny thing. Like, it's hard to call a guy who's not even averaging double figures their most important player. And I'm not 100% convinced I would, but he's the guy who contributes in the most ways,
yeah,
to them being successful. So he's definitely a very important player for them.
And then moving on to DJ Jeffrey, 6'7", fifth year player who's top 25 recruit out of high school. Started at Memphis. This is his third year at Mississippi State, averaging 6.4 points a game, 5.7 rebounds a game, shooting 41, 27, and 59. A lot of bad free throw shooters on this team.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And they get there a lot, too. So it really matters. Sometimes you'll have a team where the percentages are low. You say, well, they don't shoot a ton of them, so it doesn't impact the game as much. It impacts them that these guys don't hit free throws. Jeffries is a, an interesting story. An elite high school recruit goes to Memphis and was okay there. He was, I want to say, you know, he might have been there the year before Imani Bates, now that I think about it. But, you know, was okay, but didn't set the world on fire. Wasn't quite living up to advanced billing. And he transferred to Mississippi State. I believe this is his third year there. And he's just kind of tread water as an okay role player type. He's never come close to making good on that ranking and that promise. You know, gives him a little bit on the boards. He could score a little bit inside the arc. Not a good jump shooter at all. And as you say, really struggles at the line. So, you know, he's a guy at this point.
And finally, rounding up the starting five is Tolu Smith, 6'11", 245-pound, fifth-year senior. He began his career at Western Kentucky before transferring after his freshman year to Mississippi State, so he's been with the Bulldogs for quite a while. He's averaging 15.2 points a game, second on the team, and 8.4 rebounds a game, which is tops, and shoots 56% from the floor and an almost identical 58% from the free throw line.
Yeah, and he gets there a lot, too. I think I had it down there. What's he averaging? Did I have
seven free throws a game?
Yeah.
Seven
free throw attempts a game. So he's getting to the line a lot, not converting at a great rate. He's a good player. I mean, he's physical, yet he's got some athleticism, some mobility. This isn't quite a Zach Edey story, although, and I probably didn't look at as much in the way of video as Jim Comperoni did, but I'll hat tip to Jim Comperoni of Spartan Mag. I'll steal one item from his exhaustive scouting on Mississippi State. I don't think he'll mind that. He said he saw a lot of leaks sprung in ball screen coverage by this guy. So it suggests that because he's mobile, they are willing to try and get him out on the floor and maybe hard hedge or feather their coverage. They're not just playing him in drop coverage or much at all, really. But according to Jim, he saw a lot of problems not really containing the dribbler off ball screen. So that's something to watch for. Offensively, look, very good player around the rim, you know, scoring 15-plus a night. That's really good production. I'm going to say that he's the guy. He's my pick to put in the gutter. And it was down to three guys. It was down to their freshman guard. It was down to their point forward and this guy. And I guess I would say it's recency bias to some extent. If you think about, you know, what we saw in the Indiana game, and obviously Zach Edey is a situation of his own, but you know, Michigan State has had problems really limiting good scoring big men lately. So I'm going to go with that pick.
Yeah, and I think what you didn't mention too is that he does turn the ball over a lot. He is averaging 2.5 turnovers a game. So,
yes.
I mean, although my guess is with this team, that's not that unusual.
it's Yeah, I mean, they really, really struggle. Really struggle with giveaways. This is, I would say, in general, you're not talking about a disciplined team. They're a physical team. They've got some athletic ability. They have some guys that can get hot shooting the ball, although they're not a consistent shooting team by any means. But this is not what I would call a particularly disciplined team. And, you know, it's, again, I hate to stereotype with these things, and it manifests a little differently with them than it has with some others over the years. But we see these kind of teams out of the SEC historically.
Yeah.
More often than you do in, say, leagues like the Big Ten or the ACC. I can think about, you know, that LSU team that Michigan State played in their last Final Four run. That was a wild. I mean, they were big. They were long. They had tons of athletic ability and tons of quote unquote talent. But that team was so undisciplined, you know, and you see that out of that league from time to time. More so, not every team. I mean, I think Tennessee is a very disciplined team. You know, I think despite the reputation, I think Kentucky often is, especially defensively, not this year, but most years, they're a pretty disciplined team. But that league has a way of sprinting up those kind of teams that still get to the tournament in ways that you don't often see in the Big Ten. Usually, if you're an undisciplined team in the Big Ten, you pay for it.
Yeah. Well, and we saw that in the NCAA tournament with Michigan State and LSU that year. I mean, they just
right. Well, that's what I'm. But I'm saying teams that are undisciplined in the Big Ten don't get to the NCAA tournament.
Right, because they've already been weeded out. So
they get pounded in the league. You know, you think about Illinois their first year or so under Underwood. That team was they had a talent deficit too, but you know you can't play that way in the Big Ten. The SEC sometimes, if you've got enough other stuff, this is again it's a very generalized statement, but at times you see it where if you got enough other stuff, you can get through, you can get past being undisciplined. But I do think that's a relatively fair thing to say about Mississippi State.
All right, so moving on to the reserves, we'll start with Shaquille Moore, 6'1 senior, played his first year at NC State before transferring to MSU. He averages 8 points a game on 48, 37, and 71 shooting in about 24 minutes a game.
Yeah, he's their primary backcourt reserve. He'll see a lot of time, basically starters minutes. And, you know, another guy's, you know, their three true guards, let's say, are all decent shooters. So it's not as if Mississippi State can't hit threes. It's just they take a lot of them. They don't have anyone who you look at as, oh, my God, we've got to stop that guy. They've got three good shooters, nobody great.
And then going on to be Sean Jones, 6'5", sophomore, averaging 4.6 points a game on 43, 28, and 77 shooting.
Yeah, he also is more of a wing, obviously, than a guard. And he'll see some time in this one, gives him a little more length. But again, not a great shooter.
6'10", 280-pound senior from Saginaw Arthur Hill, Jimmy Bell, started out at St. Louis before transferring to West Virginia, and he's made it to Mississippi State. Oh, it's hard to say MSU. He averages 5.1 points a game and 5 rebounds a game in 16 minutes, shooting 47% from the floor and 65% from the line.
Yeah, I remember seeing him in high school. And believe it or not, in high school, he was weighing in at about 380.
What?
So
380?
Yes, you heard
Whoa.
Me. Big boy. We're talking, you know, Derek Nix plus territory.
plus, yeah.
As a high school. Well, Nix, I want to say Nix peaked at maybe 350-ish.
Okay.
So he was big too, but Bell was a little taller and he was heavier. So he's done a hell of a job just to get himself to the point that he would be playable. And you know, as we see at times, you know, the hope you have to have for him is that he's able to sustain this as he goes on in life. He's been able to do it, you know, while he's playing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have these Caleb Swanigan being the saddest story of recent vintage like that, where it just went bad in a hurry and it ended up with him dying. So you know, credit to Jimmy Bell for getting himself in shape so he could play major college basketball, get an education, and hopefully, you know, maybe he, it wouldn't surprise me if he gets a shot somewhere around the globe because of his size, but hopefully he's able to turn that into a lifestyle. But in any event, decent backup big man, you know, nothing fancy, but 5 rebounds a game in 16 minutes is really good production.
Yeah, that's mighty Sissoko-esque production.
So he is a very capable rebounder, and obviously you can't teach his presence around the rim in the post, so he'll see some minutes.
Well, speaking of 6'10 reserve backup big men, Keyshawn Murphy, 230 pounds, sophomore, 6'10, averaging 5 points a game and 3.8 rebounds a game in about 13 minutes, shooting 49, 20, and 70.
Yeah, and he's more of a finesse big man than Bell. The 20% from three is obviously a terrible number.
One for five, yeah.
But he does, he's a guy they put, he tries to handle a little bit more than you would think. I don't think of him as much as a pure, certainly not as a pure five, at least at this stage. More of a floater.
All right, so then the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids brings you the Michigan State player who cleans the glass best. Right now it is 7 to 6.5. You have a slight edge. I get to pick first, though, this time. If you need your glass cleaned, if it's not a backboard, make sure you contact the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. They have a pretty large region. They can cover any sort of residence. As long as it's got a window, they can clean it, whether it's your house, whether it's your business. Maybe it's a high rise. Maybe it's the U.S. Maybe it's a state capitol. You know, whatever you need done, they can come and do that job. No job is too big or too small for the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. You can find ways to contact them at the support page at tffinots.com/support. You get 15% off if you mention Rebound as you get your estimate. I'm going to go with
before you make your pick.
Are you going to try and throw me off? Is this some sort of psychological trick?
I just want to offer up a thought.
Okay.
This is a big physical opponent.
Right.
And that might have implications for what Michigan State does, especially at the five spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, give that some thought.
I thought about it.
Okay.
I feel like you're just trying to trick me is what I really think is going on here.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, right. So naturally you think, well, this is a game where Mati Sissoko is going to play some, but I also could see him fouling out quickly. You know, I think the rebounding this, it's funny. We've gone through different phases through the season and we had our Mati Sissoko. I mean, there's no point picking anyone else part of, you know, run in the beginning of the season when he's playing 25, you know, plus minutes a game. And then Malik Hall sort of emerged with, you know, occasional games from like a Jayden Akins or someone else. And then recently it's been, Malik has been consistently like 6-7 rebounds. And that is often enough to win the competition. But there are sometimes people kind of cycle up, and whether it's a Carson Cooper or Jackson Kohler or Mati Sissoko. That's a long way of getting around saying, I'm just going to go with Malik Hall since he's the most consistent. I know he's going to get some rebounds. So that leaves you, since you're so convinced it's going to be a physical game and that you need a physical presence, I'll let you pick Jackson Kohler.
Well, it's not going to be Jackson Kohler. I am really torn on this one because I hear you in terms of what impact fouls could have, but I also think, it's likely that Michigan State continues to start Carson Cooper.
Yep.
He'll absorb, and Kohler will play too. I'm gonna go off the board. I'm gonna go with Mati Sissoko.
Oh, so you're gonna just even shirk Cooper? Yeah.
I think that this is a game where Mati, much as he was against Purdue, they're gonna need him, and I think his strength could play a role in this. So I'm gonna go with Mati, and we'll see if he can step into the time machine and go back to about 3 months ago. And get me a win.
I will say that right now at the five, I think there's so many fans who are clamoring for more Booker, and he's pretty much, I mean, he's playing the four now. You've definitely seen that some.
Yes.
But he's definitely subbing in as a five too. I would almost say half the time he plays the five and half he's playing the four. And so people are getting sort of what they want as far as that goes, as far as getting him some exposure. Kohler, of course, now is back from his injury and looks okay-ish. I think he's still, you know, not quite found his footing. And I still feel like there's no way for Izzo and the staff to anticipate what they're going to need that game, what they're going to get. Maybe that's a better way to put it. They don't know they're going to get that game.
I think that's true.
And so it's like, we're going to throw some, you know, Star Cooper. If he's fantastic, he's going to play 20 minutes, right? If he's okay, yep. Then you see how Kohler does. Maybe Kohler, and then it's Mahdi. And so I think picking anybody in this situation is going to be really hard. I know Malik is going to be on the floor unless he gets fouls, which is what happened in the Purdue game. He only got one rebound. So anyway, all that's to say is it's a good competition because there's really no way to know what's going to happen. And so I only need a half a point to tie, a 1 point to win. And if Michigan State keeps going, then, you know, then we have to figure out what's going on with North Carolina. So let's hope that that's what happens out next.
Yeah, it's not a good position to be in. Malik is definitely the safe choice, but, you know, you're really trying to, and might this against all odds be a game where one of Michigan State's guards steps up? You know, Jaden Akins, Tyson Walker have done that in recent weeks. So there's a, once you get past Malik, it gets very difficult, but I'm going to roll the dice with Mahdi.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this is the kind of game too, where you can talk yourself into anything. Well, they're going to launch a bunch of threes. They're going to be long rebounds. It's going to be Jaden Akins, Tyson Walker, Trey Holloman, AJ Hogard day. I mean, who knows?
Yep. No, all those are reasonable. There really aren't too many unreasonable choices for the second spot. There's only one reasonable choice for the first spot. You know, I tried to do what I could.
I appreciate the attempt. Yeah, I know you're an attorney, and so you can just try to talk things people into circles.
That should not be seen as evidence of my persuasion skills. I wasn't very persuasive.
It wasn't very subtle. No. I've got kids, so I know exactly how when people try to manipulate me. I'm all over that. Right. So, all right, let's move on to the five keys of the game brought to you by Nudge Printing. Spring is coming, summer's there, and so you need to probably make sure you've got your t-shirts and whatever else you need. No better place to get your t-shirts and your Michigan State gear. They've got vintage logos. They've got all kinds of massive collection. Even if you have someone in your life you want to get that's not a Michigan State fan, they've got plenty of stuff too you can get. All kinds of different teams outside of the University of Michigan, even Indiana, which now my son at the last Big Ten, now that he's committed to Purdue, he was very big at booing Indiana. So he's already sort of bought into the, whenever they're yelling Hoosiers, he's yelling losers. So it's, I'm losing him to the West Lafayette. I don't know what's going on here, Rod, but, anyway, so make sure you head on over to Nudge Printing at nudgeprinting.com, 20% off your order. If you type in Final Four, just as one word into checkout, great stuff there, and just peruse their collection. You won't just be disappointed. I promise you. All right. So first key to the game is playing fast. This is something we've been talking about for a long time. Pace, not only transition and fast break, but also to get into the half court quickly, because Michigan State just does not play well in a slow, methodical pace in the half court. And this does not seem like the team that you're going to want to try and do that. Otherwise, you're going to be maybe get a lot of threes off, but they might be bad three-point attempts.
Yeah, and teams have been able to play fast against Mississippi State. So I think that it's imperative, just based on what Michigan State does, that they play with pace. So that it's critical from that perspective. But I also think you play into Mississippi State's hands if you turn this into a grind it out kind of game. And then, as I talked about earlier, I do think there's a chance that MSU will be able to get some things done in transition. We often see it at this time of year. I think this kind of team in particular, you know, there's no history. For example, if Michigan State were to play North Carolina, North Carolina is not going to be
shot. You're gonna sneak up on them.
One, because the programs have history with each other, although not these players. It's been a while, actually, since MSU's seen North Carolina. But because North Carolina does exactly the same thing Michigan State does. They're the only team in the country that plays the break the way MSU does. So they see it every day in practice. You're not going to catch them by surprise. Mississippi State's another matter. And the fact that, you know, again, if there was an ACC team we were talking about, because they see Carolina, I would say, all right, they've got a chance to be reasonably ready against this.
Right.
But
right.
There's nobody in the SEC that plays the way MSU does in terms of transition game. So I think there's a chance that MSU, I don't know how many points that's going to amount to, but I think there will be some opportunities.
All right, so the second key to the game is defensive rebounding. This has been a key for at least half the games this season. And this is, again, another team that is elite. Now, we can assume, since it's Michigan State, and when they are up against elite offensive rebounding teams, they seem to rebound defensively pretty well. And they've I can't think of a single game where they played an elite offensive rebound team that they just got smoked on the boards. It always seems to be, it seems you don't expect. So hopefully that just holds par in this game as well.
Yeah, and the Big Ten does not have quite as many great offensive rebounding teams as it often does. That's usually a strength of the conference. And, you know, outside of Purdue, maybe Illinois.
Yep.
It really wasn't this year. But look, we can't count on that. I mean, the fact of the matter is this is a team that does it with regularity, and Michigan State's defensive rebounding is not something that's been regular. So it's something Mississippi State does. They do it with a lot of size. I mean, we just ticked off, what was it, three guys 6'10 or above, and then some big athletic 6'7-ish guys, a couple of those too. This is a team that can go get it. When I think about the matchups, you know, to start at least, Akins is going to have to guard a 6'7 opponent who gets 2.5 offensive rebounds a game.
Right.
That's my assumption. Maybe they'll put Hogard on him, but it'll be one of those two guys that either way they're giving up size.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So this is going to be, again, much as it was against Purdue, gang rebounding, all hands on deck, five to the glass. They're going to have to do it. You know, it's the only way they can limit this team. And really, if they can find a way to limit what Mississippi State does on the offensive boards, that's going to go a long way to getting a victory, because I don't expect Mississippi State to shoot the lights out.
And the third key to the game is turnovers. We already mentioned before that Mississippi State is terrible at turning the ball over. And boy, it's weird that you expect, it's just still strange to expect a giant advantage on turnovers for Michigan State versus other teams, since that's always been, outside of, I guess last year was better, but anyway, so that is a definite advantage. And then from a steal standpoint too, both teams get a lot of steals. And so especially a team you want to get some transition, move fast, is a good way to speed up the game too, getting some steals and easy layups.
Look, I'm going to be shocked if Michigan State doesn't force a bunch of turnovers and a decent amount of live ball turnovers. I'm going to be shocked if that doesn't happen. The key is, can Michigan State live up to its seasonal profile and avoid doing the same thing? Because Mississippi State is a top 40 team in steal percentage on defense. So they are active. They will force you into mistakes that way, live ball mistakes. Can Michigan State avoid that? Michigan State's been very good this year, by program standards, historically good. It's the best turnover team Izzo's ever had. It's not particularly close. So that is a real strength, but it needs to be a strength in this game. There need, because of the potential for Mississippi State to do some damage on its offensive glass, MSU really needs a turnover game to show up in their favor.
Yeah, I always feel like there are about four ways you get turnovers. One is, of course, a steal. That's the obvious one. The second is an unforced, like throwing a ball out of bounds. The third way is getting a 30-second, basically a 30-second, or sometimes, I guess, a rare case, a 5-second call. And the fourth would be drawing a charge. And so it's interesting that, you know, when we talked about it, that they have a really good steal percentage, but their overall turnover percentage as a defense
is not
great for Mississippi State. So they must just not do the other stuff. They must be really good at getting steals. And, you know, don't draw charges. They don't get the same refs that Michigan State had against Purdue. And they don't, you know, they don't. The people thrown in the stands, that's just a random thing that I think has almost no, I'd say almost no bearing on how, you know, stingy you are. Although I guess if you make passes difficult, then people can sort of panic and start throwing away.
Well, here's the thing. I think one thing that plays into it, Michigan State generally, and I don't have their average length of defensive possession number in front of me, but I believe it's fairly good. They
gotta make be pretty teams, long, yeah.
Yeah, they make teams take a while. And generally speaking, that's going to lead to some opponent mistakes at times.
Right.
You know, Mississippi State, teams are getting shots up pretty quickly. And I think it's because, you know, I mentioned they're playing that attempt at kind of a no middle kind of defense. But if you can handle that, if you can break that without getting iced to the sideline, there are shot opportunities there. So I think that's probably part of what's going on, is that they're not forcing teams to really have to try to dissect what they're doing. It's they're going to force a live ball turnover, or they're going to give up a shot, you know, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Teams are not having to grind out possessions, because that's oftentimes what happens, is when you just got to consistently go 24 seconds, 25 seconds, you can make mistakes because your attention span gets worn down, you know? So yeah. I don't know. It's a theory, but there is more of a disconnect there. Michigan State's correlation is much closer. And most times you see teams with good steal percentages, you'll see a correspondingly good overall turnover percentage. But with them, there's a pretty big gap.
Yeah, this just reminds me actually of ping pong. And so when I play ping pong, I just can return, but I don't have any killer, you know, shots. Mm-hmm. I just wait for my opponent to sort of put it into the net. I mean, you were an all-state tennis player, so you probably, you know, had...
not quite. I was seated at regionals one year. That was the peak. Not quite all-state.
But, I mean, you know, sometimes that's the way you play. You just play to wait for your opponent to make mistakes. The really great ones, the ones
correct.
Hit the kill shots.
I could go on about this, but it's one of the things that's really gone out of the men's game in tennis is what used to be called serve and volley players. And, you know, guys like John McEnroe, he was a great example of it.
Jimmy Connors.
Where he would just wear you down, you know. And John McEnroe, it's not like he couldn't put guys away, but it wasn't like today's game where it's guys with, you know, 190 mile, and I'm exaggerating, but 190 mile hour serves, and you know, you might have an exchange of two or three volleys and then the point's over. But you're right, it's when you can do that kind of thing consistently, and I don't think Mississippi State is that kind of team defensively. Doesn't seem like it.
You don't just get basketball here in the show, just to point this out. You know, we've got to cover everything.
Yeah.
All right, so fourth key to the game is threes. Mississippi State, as we mentioned, they're very good at defending the three, we'll say, but they allow a lot of attempts. Michigan State has been really good and really not good shooting threes this season, whether they're open, you know, wide open or not. So, you know, this I feel like a lot of this just comes down to Akins and how well he can, if he gets dialed in, then they're all going to be okay.
It's interesting you mention him, because Izzo talked about that in his press conference today. He said that Jaden Akins was as despondent as he's ever seen him after the Purdue game at the Big Ten tournament, because he feels like he was responsible for the loss. He's letting his team down. And of course, Izzo isn't buying into that. And he said as much, but there might not be a better bellwether than Jaden Akins. I mean, it's not, at least of late, I feel like that's what it's come down to. If he's on, Michigan State's probably going to have at least a solid day. If he's not, that's going to be something to overcome. Because the way they utilize him, you know, he is a spot-up shooter in this offense. So his shots are going to disproportionately come from three. And if he's not hitting, it can be tough for them to overcome it as a team. You know, but whomever's getting shots, the bottom line is, if Michigan State can have a good day against these guys, it's going to be tough for Mississippi State to win, in my opinion. If Michigan State can have a 40% plus day from three, I think that's going to be tough for them to overcome.
And I also feel like, you know, I think I mentioned this a couple shows ago about Akins, but his transition three is his best three. I mean, that's his best 3-point, like the, where he just catch and shoot in the corner. He's not as good. He's definitely, when he has to think about it, he is so much better that way. And this is a game that makes you think, at least, you know, look, before it happens, obviously, that there may be plenty of opportunities for him to get rolling on break those threes. And you could definitely see him doing some damage here in this situation. So, you know, maybe that bodes well for the 3-point shooting for the Spartans of this game.
Hopefully so. I mean, getting whatever it takes to get him loose. And I think you're right. I think he is maybe a little better in transition. And so if those chances are there for him, hopefully he can get hot, get it dialed in, and then Michigan State will be off to the races.
All right, the fifth and final key, which I think actually goes almost back to the second key of defensive rebounding, is toughness. And I think this is something that, you know, you mentioned Michigan State, you say big physical team. And then a lot of that, I think, can manifest itself on the boards as well as other places on the floor.
Defensive rebounding is certainly part of it, but it's a subset of it.
I expect
this team to be, you know, Izzo mentioned that it's probably a little bit of a benefit for MSU to have just seen Purdue, because Purdue plays very physically, as we know. And so this isn't going to be jarring in the slightest to MSU to face another team that's physical. And I think it's a broader element, though, than just rebounding. Because I think Michigan State's got to show up with some toughness and some physicality on the defensive end. You know, this team has some big players who can get things done. And so you're going to have to stand tall in the post. Loose balls, you know, 50-50 balls. Even offensively, you know, you're going to have to be strong with the ball. Anytime you've got a team that's top 40 in terms of steal percentage, well, they've got active hands, right? So guys handling the ball going to have to be strong with the ball. So in a lot of different ways, it needs to show up.
So any further thoughts about this? I mean, I think in general, I think we're both excited about the draw in the sense that Michigan State got a 9 seed. I understand why people wanted a 10. I mean, I totally get that. But, you know, theoretically, 7 seeds are better than 8 seeds. So you should get a better first-round matchup. But outside of that, I mean, I like this matchup is not a team that not that it's not a capable team, but it's certainly not a team that I'm like, wow, this is just a really bad matchup for Michigan State.
Well, look at some of the 2 seeds that were out there. If you're going to play that game, because we're talking
about the second round is what we're worried about.
Yeah, because the first round, you know, again, what's the difference between Mississippi State and any of the other 8s or any of the other 7s? I don't know that there's a lot in terms of overall quality. I think it's all about the same.
Right.
But is Carolina a definitively worse matchup than, say, Iowa State would have been, or I believe Arizona's a 2 in Michigan State's region, right?
Yeah.
They're the 2. Or Arizona? No, I wouldn't say so. That's not to bag on Carolina. They're obviously a good team to earn a 1 seed, but we talked about this when we started our NCAA tournament conversation. To me, it was about, if you were going to have to be on the 8-9 line, it was about avoiding 3 teams. And that's why you didn't want to be on the 8-9 line, because you figure, right, well, 75% odds that you're going to get one of those 3 teams. Well, it worked out that they got the 25%. They got the non-member of that group. So, yeah, I mean, look, nobody's counting any chickens at this point. You know, Mississippi State is fully capable of beating Michigan State. Michigan State is a slight favorite. I think they were 1-point favorite in KenPom. Mm-hmm. I want to say I saw the opening line. I'm not sure what it's at now. Vegas was 2.5. So it's expected to be a tight game, but Michigan State's a slight favorite, as, you know, can occasionally happen in an 8-9 game. You get a 9 who's actually slightly favored. We all understand that reality, so there's no chest puffing going on here. But if you're looking at, well, are you okay with how this unfolded, given the array of options that seem to be on the table as we rolled into Sunday evening, I am very happy with how it worked out. Because to play in Dayton, which seemed a distinct possibility, ended up that it wasn't a possibility at all. But given that Michigan State was not just a 9, but the highest ranked 9 at 33rd overall in the tournament, you gotta be happy with it, right? As with what happened, as compared to having to go to Dayton tomorrow or Wednesday. I mean, we've seen that once. That was not a spot you want to be in. So I'll take the path that they've got, you know, or they could have been, obviously they could have been an 8-9 in one of those other three regions. And I think that would have been worse. So than what they got, you know, so understanding that absolutely zero is given or assumed with this team. I feel okay about it.
If you've been watching the season.
yeah. So, you know, they're in what seems to be a decent spot. And so now you go roll the balls out and you see what happens. But I will say this, and I gather we're going to have Dom on tomorrow, right?
Correct.
So this was, and the more I look at it, the less I understand about how this went.
It's a Rorschach test there, yeah.
Because every time I feel like, and I've looked at it a lot, every time I feel like I'm starting to understand, okay, this is what the committee seemed to be emphasizing, and that's why the seeding decisions went the way they did. Or even in the case of Virginia, the inclusion decision went the way it did. Every time I think I've got my arms wrapped around a through line, there's a contradiction that comes up. And so I just, yeah, it's a weird one. It is the weirdest draw in years, to in my opinion. I mean, because we're talking about some seed line differentials that are massive, that are really, really big. And we touched on it a little bit last night, but, you know, the way the Mountain West got seeded, a lot of people are talking about that. I think on an inclusion standpoint, the Big East is up in arms because they felt like they had three more teams that deserved bids and none of them got it. You know, why Virginia is in over many teams, you could list 5 or 6 that probably have at least as good a claim to that spot, if not better, than Virginia, you know, when you look across the board at the total picture, and yet Virginia's in. And frankly, as I'm sure many of our listeners have picked up on, there are a lot of people out there who don't understand how Michigan State got a 9. And again, not just a 9, but the highest 9.
Yeah, right.
So right on the border of being an 8, there's, you know, we felt like, you know, they had to get maybe to the conference semifinal to have a shot at that. That's what it felt like, you know?
Yeah.
And it turned out, no, not at all. You can lose in the quarterfinal. I would say one thing was demonstrated, and we'll talk to Dom about this to get his take tomorrow, but I happen to think one clear-cut message got delivered, at least for this year, and it's something Dom has talked about with us in the past. Conference tournament results, for seeding purposes at least, don't mean a thing.
Yeah.
They don't mean anything. Because if you look at, you know, New Mexico was a good example of this. People had them a couple seed lines higher than they ended up, and they won a highly competitive Mountain West Conference tournament. What good did it do them? None, because as it turns out, if they hadn't won it, they weren't getting in at all. So it's only the fact that they got the automatic qualifier. You know, a bunch of other Mountain West teams, you know, Colorado State, I think got to the, did they get to the final? No, they got to the semis. But they have a couple teams in the play-in games that, you know, nobody saw coming that had success in that postseason tournament. You know, we have a lot of examples of it If you look across the landscape where the conference tournament results just really didn't seem to impact a whole hell of a lot. So anyway, we'll touch on that a little bit more in the next episode. But
well, that just reminds me too that we have a bracket challenge that is now open at Poolhost. You can head on over to the contest page at our website at tffinots.com/contests. Please enter. Just one entry per person. Get your friends, whoever you want. It should be a lot of fun. Right now, we've already beaten Rod. Rod was in last place for the Big Ten projections. So,
you want to keep repeating that?
Well, I might. Well, you try to trick me, so I'm just going to remind people that you were in last place. And the bracket challenge last year, I think I was almost in last place. I didn't quite finish last. I think maybe Gabe from Nudge Printing, he's going to be over there. We're going to have prizes are going to be from Nudge Printing. So I guess there's no incentive for Gabe to win. Maybe he could get something from the brothers, like it's a free gutter work or something.
This year, man, put a blindfold on and throw darts at a board. I mean, really.
Go by mascots this time, I suppose.
Yeah, you know? Just no. I mean, The best bet you got, the one team you might feel a lot of confidence in would be UConn. My brother-in-law is a big UConn fan. So we had a little discussion last night, and he asked me if I was picking them, and I said, this year is entirely about parity, and UConn would be the closest thing to a team that I would say has gotten beyond that. But then again, I think about how many years that overall number one seeds win it, and it's very rare.
Yeah.
Very rare. It happens.
There's an element of luck to it, right? I mean, there's an element of...
Yeah. And, well, that's any time you're in a six-game single elimination tournament that you've got to run six games to win it, yeah, the best team usually does not win. You know, the best team over the course of a regular season, at least. So that's the thing. If you've got one team that you feel good about, but then you think about, well, what are the odds that team actually runs it? And they're trying to go back to back, which makes the test even stiffer from just a historical point of view. I mentioned this on the Spartan Mag board yesterday. I was watching the CBS coverage, and I don't fault these guys because what the hell else can you do, I guess. But all three of their experts had 3-1 seeds getting through.
It's been a while since that's happened.
I'm pretty convinced that's not going to happen. If one seed gets through, I think that'll be good. There were none last year. Let's remember that.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think, last year, the obvious pick to get the Final Four is Alabama. I mean, no question they're going to be there.
Yeah.
And, I don't think they made the Sweet 16, right? Didn't they lose in the second round?
No, they did. They got I believe they went out in the Sweet 16. It was either Sweet 16 or Elite 8.
Yeah, I think it was Sweet 16. You're right. But anyway, I feel like the prediction is a lot easier. I mean, this is a dumb statement, but I feel like once you get to the 16, it's a little bit easier because you've at least seen people play two games. And then I think those bigger teams, you can see if they're rolling or not. And so, anyway,
well, that's true. Once you see it, like, for example, last year, I did feel like you could sort of start to see Connecticut coming.
Yeah. Right.
Like they were looking by the time they got to the second weekend, that was a team you could identify and say, boy, that team looks like they've got their shit together, but trying to do it at this point is a lot tougher because everybody's got warts. Everybody.
Yeah. So anyway, make sure you head on over to the contest page. You can sign up for that, that contest. And, I just think there's something else. Well, I can't think of it right now, so I guess it's not too important. Oh, yeah, that's right. If you have a question for the show, we didn't have one segment this game or this show, but head on over to your email, send it to me at eric@tffinots.com. You can either have a voice memo, I just play it during the show, or you can just type out your question to Rod or I, and we'll answer it hopefully the next show whenever we get a chance. So we'll see after Dom comes on, and we'll talk about the brackets and what happened. And if he has any idea, if he can make heads or tails of what happened. So until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.